And welcome to it, San Diego. Finally a Friday. Good to have you with us here on Gwen and Chris as we get underway. Four full hours on the program today. Chris Ello, Tony Gwynn Jr., and Matt Scraby. And we got a lot to get done today. We got a good show lined up. As always, plenty of baseball talk. And we got the WNBA finals could be decided tonight. We got a big weekend in college football. And, of course, the NFL. So a lot to get to. Some great games last night. But, guys, I welcome you to the day that absolutely nobody has been looking forward to. The day when the Dodgers could clinch their berth in the World Series.
Yes.
Yeah, none of us were hoping for this day, but here it is, and they're getting underway in about 10 minutes in New York. And, Tony, after the way they beat down the Mets again last night, I mean, honestly, what the Dodgers are doing right now is making Yu Darvish look amazing.
Yeah.
Because Yu Darvish is currently the only pitcher that has faced the Dodgers in the playoffs this year that has been able to limit them to anything less than 7 runs, 8 runs. Last night, 10 runs. They've won games by 9-0. They've won 2 games 8-0.
Yeah.
They win 10-2. I mean, they're making it look easy right now.
I mean, when you really think about it, I mean, the Padres have played the Dodgers the best. And granted, they've only, and here's this, it also makes me think about how silly it is that people are questioning the bye, right? Because they have had to play one less series.
Yes, it hasn't affected them this year.
No, it hasn't. And so, you know, really overall, like just think about the guys, right? I think Padres held Ohtani down pretty good. They held Betts down pretty well. Freeman, when he was in there, he was, you know, he was one of the guys who swung the bat well. But all in all, they pitched to those guys and held them down as well as a lot better than what the Mets have done so far. And so,
yeah, I didn't think the Mets had a great pitching staff.
They did
to begin with,
they
and
did.
That's why I was, you know, I think the Mets have been riding this wave of magic, and now that magic has to turn from winning games to winning a series. And this would indeed be magical if the Mets can somehow come back from everything that's happened to them. But
yeah, they don't
have any shutdown pitchers, and the Dodgers are just, you know, abusing them. Frankly,
yeah, no, they have the same problem they had going into the season, which was they didn't have a lot of depth pitching wise. I mean, remind me the closer's name again.
Diaz.
He has not been locked down,
but they're not even getting close to using
throughout the course of the season. That was always a kind of a soft spot. Senga didn't pitch a lot of during the season, and
he only pitched one game during the season.
He hasn't been effective really.
No,
they didn't even.
They had a choice to use him today, and they're not using him. They're using David Peterson to try to stay alive. But you know, our old guy Sean Manaea pitched okay against the Dodgers, good enough to win that ball game.
Yeah, he pitched well.
But Quintana had no chance. Severino, no chance. And what the Dodgers do is the same thing that the Padres do really well.
Yep.
They don't swing at any bad pitches, so you just have to keep throwing it. If you throw it just off the corner or just below the zone,
they're going to spit on it. Right.
And the Padres were so effective doing that. And it was interesting. John Smoltz, who I implore you guys, if you really want to learn some of the intricacies of pitching and hitting and the batter, you know, pitcher, you know, face off each at bat, you know, listen to what this guy is saying. He is absolutely brilliant. But he said, look, the Mets lucked out in a lot of ways because they drew the Phillies in the last round, and the Phillies are the opposite of the Dodgers. They swing at everything.
Right.
And that works for them, but not against the Mets, who were nibbling on the strike zone and not really giving them any pitches to hit.
And the Mets knew that. It was a familiar opponent to them. They knew what was giving them success and what wasn't giving them success. And during the course of the season, if you remember, that was, I think the Phillies ended up winning one more game than the Mets did in that season series. So
they had a good idea
of how they wanted to
Let's not throw them any strikes. Now, you did the same thing against the Dodgers. You wind up with 80 pitches by the third inning, and they have walked 30 Dodgers in this series. 30!
Can't do it.
In 4 games, the championship series, you've put 30 guys on base for free. I mean, that's a lot of credit for that goes to the Dodgers again because they don't swing at anything. But the Mets just have not adjusted, and now they are, you know, they're on the doorstep.
It's funny. I think about how this relates to the Padres. Jesse and I used to talk about this. The one thing that seemed to give the Padres offense trouble is strike throwers. If you were a team that nibbled, they were going to drag you out to the deep end. But occasionally you get a dude that is just throwing all strikes. He's not really messing around off outside the zone. And those were the games where it seemed like the Padres struggled, whether it was just luck, guys hitting balls at people, or, you know, trying to
do too much
or trying to use their game plan that
and always
sees hitting, a whole bunch of pitches.
Always hitting behind in the count is a lot different than hitting ahead in
that
the count.
That is absolutely right.
Right? I mean, I'm not a hitter, but I'm asking you. Listen, I mean, that just seems
just
like
look at the percentages. For the number folks out there, you look at what the average is from 10, 20, 30, 31, 21.
And then to 1-2 or 0-2. With two strikes, batters hit under 200.
Correct.
Except for Luis Arraez, and he doesn't count because he's the worst player in baseball.
He's just a myth, Chris. He's just a myth.
Yeah, you know. Anyway, the Dodgers are doing their thing. Freeman didn't even have to play last night. Obviously, Ohtani is so good, but a little reminder that Mookie Betts isn't bad.
Yeah.
And Tommy
Big
Edman.
Big reminder.
Let's salute Tommy Edman. They put him in the cleanup spot last night, Tony, and he cleaned up with three RBIs, a couple of doubles. He's had a great series for them.
The one thing that had, remember, during the season, the problem for the Dodgers was after those three guys.
Right.
Now they have an after those three guys, and they've happened to all kind of start swinging the bat right during the playoffs. Edman, really, he got moved up that last game, but he had been at the bottom of the lineup.
He was an afterthought.
And he was the one that kept getting on base every time Ohtani needed to do something. You know what I'm saying? So they got it rolling right now. They look like, out of the four teams remaining, they look like the most difficult to beat right now.
And it is, you know, just watching them do what they're doing, I can't help but, you know, feel the pain of a week and a half ago when the Padres had them down 2-1, and most people felt the Padres were ready to move on.
Put it this way.
I mean, we were so close to knocking them out. Now they're sitting on the doorstep of the World Series.
From a personal standpoint, it's been far easier to dial into the Yankee-Guardian series
than it has been
to watch all of the Met-Dodger innings. I can flip in, flip out. But it's way easier to sit and watch 5, 6, 7 innings of the Guardians Yankees for me than it is to watch the Dodgers and Mets right now.
It is hard to watch because we know that we could have been there. Mets are off to a better start today. In Game 5, Ohtani did not homer leading off the game. So that did happen yesterday to the Mets, and they never really recovered. The other game, the one you just spoke about.
How do you know that?
Oh no, he's coming up now. I saw Betts on the screen. I thought he was coming to bat. Ah, and Ohtani had already batted.
I was like, man, Chris's website baseballscores.com is great.
Ohtani's already out as far as my website is concerned. No, he's still coming up. I'm sorry.
I got a message about Ohtani because on the Scravy Show,
34 since September 1st. That's ridiculous.
They said because I said. Earlier in the week when Ohtani didn't have the stats that he does now, like, if I'm the Dodgers, I'm a little bit worried, or I'm a little bit angry at the production of Shohei Ohtani in the postseason. And then they messaged me last night, you think Ohtani sucks now? Yeah. I'm like, I never said he sucked.
People have great memories if you say something like that.
Yes,
Tony,
you brought up
his batting average with runners in scoring position, 17-20. They put up on the screen last night. That's never happened before in the history of baseball.
There you go.
Just never happened before in baseball history.
Ever.
That ever anybody's ever gone 17-20 in a stretch with runners in scoring position like he has.
I'm positive that Peterson is starting his game specifically because he's left-handed.
Ohtani is leading off the game. Don't want to let him hit a home run. We'll see. But Betts tonight, the Dodgers are loaded and trying to wrap it up. I do want to talk about the Yankees and the Guardians.
This is an amazing game.
I think this is the new age way to say it was a great game. You used to just say it was a great game. Now you have to say it's an instant classic. Right?
It was.
Instant classic, though. You can almost watch that game again tonight and enjoy it just as much. Aaron Judge, that home run that he hit, Tony, the line drive. was almost caught by the second baseman and then carried out of the ballpark.
Chris,
how do you hit it like that?
You actually feel bad for
Class A.
Because, I mean, his mistake was not throwing a ball.
Yeah.
That pitch is on the black pitch.
It wasn't bad.
It was down. And the only place for him to really go as Ohtani singles to lead off this game.
Still, the Mets have a better start.
Touche. The only thing he could have done differently was just make sure it wasn't a strike.
Man,
it was just a great. You see some great hitting in baseball, especially this time of year. That one's at the tippity top of the list.
I mean, line drive just over the second baseman's head, out of the ballpark.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the old saying, you hang your laundry on that. What a line drive shot that was.
I mean, the right fielder thought he had, like, a legitimate chance to catch that bad boy.
I think he felt he did, and it ended up over the fence. Nobody could believe it.
And then Giancarlo.
Stanton hits one, and they go ahead, and two outs, bottom of the ninth.
Matter of fact, can you pull up those calls? Those are two of the best calls we've had.
Which one? Like the
Brian Anderson's.
Oh, I do.
All three of them were legit calls, especially the last one from the young kid from the Guardians that tied it.
Oh, Big Christmas?
It took me about five listens to figure out what he actually called
it. I didn't get it either.
Because his last name's Noel.
Yes, his last name's Noel. While you're looking that up, I want to ask you about that last at bat.
Yeah.
In the the game tying home run, not the Fry.
Oh,
the Noel one.
Yeah, okay.
Again, I give kudos to Ron Darling. This is, to me, is great broadcasting. And what he said, if you remember, there was one out, and Bo Naylor was the runner at second base, and the batter hit a comebacker to Luke Weaver. Bo Naylor read it perfectly and sprinted to third.
And, he had a comebacker to who?
To the pitcher.
Okay.
And Bo Naylor, a lot of guys would just stay at second there, right? Two outs, you can't take a chance. But he got a good read. He took third, and the pitcher had to throw out the runner at first. So now two outs, runner at third.
He didn't want to bounce the slider.
As opposed to two outs, runner at second. And Ron Darling said that could be a big play because Weaver loves to go to his slider for the strikeout. He may not be willing to bounce it because it would tie the game. He didn't bounce it. He hung it, and the guy hits the home run. Little things like that make a big difference in baseball.
That's high-level baseball, right?
That is high-level,
That's high-level because that's a guy who's been in that situation and can tell you what's going through a pitcher's head. Now,
exactly.
I think he would also tell you that the best of the best say, I don't care. I'm going to trust. And this is where chemistry and trust and all those words that you hear that sometimes just go in one and out the other.
I take it back. This was the home run to Fry. Because the winning run went to third.
I thought it was a Fry.
It was the Fry home run. The winning run went to third. He did not want to bounce the slider. He left it up enough for Fry to hit the home run.
And so, you know, I think what he would also tell you is that the good ones, the really good pitchers say, you know what? I trust my catcher. I trust that I can throw this ball in the dirt, and he's going to block it.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you have just a smidgen of doubt of, is he going to block it? Man, I don't want to put this in the dirt and have it get by him.
That's what happened.
You leave it up just a little bit more.
Game over.
And a mistake, it leads into a walk-off homer, you know? And, you know, I think the same could be said even on Noel's homer, right? That's a hanging breaking ball as well. It's 1-2 count, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
that
strikes,
slider has got to be
the
down
Noel one?
In the dirt, the Noel one.
I have it right here.
I believe it was 1-2.
It's 1-0.
1-0. Okay, so maybe he doesn't need it in that one. Did Fry have two strikes at that point?
I can check it. I'm
pretty sure Fry did.
I thought one of them had
pretty
two strikes.
Pretty sure Fry
okay, so
had
it was
two
Fry.
Strikes.
Do you guys want to hear Brian Anderson?
Yes, please.
And
all right, let's hear. Play him in order.
This is Big Christmas.
Wait, no. Wait, play him in order.
You've got to
play
him in order. Can we do Judge first?
Can we do
first?
Judge?
Oh, yeah.
Judge Stanton.
Oh, you want me to get... I thought you were
that's
just talking about
saying.
The Guardians.
Yeah, no. That's what I was saying. We can get
goodness.
To it later.
Okay.
We can do it on
they're actually making me work today. What is this all about?
Well, you took the last 3 days off.
Oh, here goes
Chris. You just keep walking into
here
these,
here goes
man.
Chris.
You just keep walking into them. I don't understand.
You're my guy, Scrape. I love it.
We'll get to him on the other side. Give Scrape some chance to get them together. But... Hey, those are the things that are so much more magnified.
And that's what I love about postseason baseball, because all that matters. And I really like good announcing. And when Ron Darling says, watch out, he may hang a curveball, and then the guy hangs it and he hits the game-winning home run, you know, that's getting the job done. Yeah. So good job on Ron Darling. Okay, the Dodgers got a base hit by Ohtani. Betts hit a line drive that they called a double. Sorry, but Starling Marte should have caught it, trying to make a sliding catch in right field. He didn't catch it. Second and third, nobody out, and David Peterson gets out of it. No run score. He retired Hernandez, Freeman, struck out Edmund. So first advantage in this game goes to the Mets as they survive the top of the first. We are underway, Gwynn and Chris. Lots of good baseball stuff for you today. Also, we haven't forgot about our Aztecs. Mark Ziegler, San Diego Union-Tribune. Cody Decker, baseball podcaster and former Padre. He will talk baseball with us later on. It's Friday, so we got Daily Gambit. We got Chris First, the Fans, Big Five, and a countdown for you today. So sit back, enjoy this one on 97.3 The Fan.
Hey, it's Ben Higgins. Car crashes happen on our San Diego roads and freeways every day, but when it happens to you, call the Barnes Firm. Medical bills, insurance hassles, need someone on your side? Call the Barnes Firm, 1-800-8-MILLION, or visit thebarnesfirm.com.
2:22 on the clock, Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Sello. Matt Scravey, baseball coverage on 97.3 The Fan is presented by T-Mobile. Head to T-Mobile.com and get a great deal on the iPhone 16 Pro. We were talking about Brian Anderson, BA, TBS's voice. A couple great, he had four really good calls in crunch time. I think we have four. We're going to play them in order and just talk about them on the other side.
All right, so it's Aaron Judge first, because Aaron Judge I told first. You in the break,
Judge
you guys can tie
me.
It up.
Aaron Judge first.
Yes, this call I was watching, or this play,
it
made me depressed.
And it speaks to what Chris was talking about when we first brought the subject up, about, you know, hanging your clothes on a line.
Yeah.
Listen to Brian's voice. You could tell he does a little surprise.
On two, here he comes. Judge, line drive, right field, hit well, and it is up and out! Judge has homered! The game is tied at three! Incredible!
So, you know, the one thing I think about doing these games all the time, especially these type of games,
yeah,
is how good the Dave Marcus of
television
TV or radio has to be. Because if he doesn't turn those field mics down,
yeah,
there's going to be all kinds of
expletives.
Being slung around. Because you can hear it. You can kind of faintly hear some of them, but you can tell the mic has been turned down as they get the camera pans
as
towards
he gets
the dugout.
Yeah, the for plate. Sure. I love it when they come to the plate and the mic picks up. That's right! Bleep, 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 bleep! It's like the players like right in front of the microphone.
It's one of my favorite
they
parts.
Celebrate the way they should.
100%.
The other thing Dave Marcus related, and he could probably tell you too, but when Brian Anderson modulates to incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to watch that too, because it's going to come out really distorted if you're not
can't have it over modulated.
Paying
now.
Attention and it just goes to show you, sound
term.
Has improved since the days of Strasburg.
Strasburg,
things are much better.
So that was the homer
that tied it up.
That tied it. Here's Giancarlo's homer that gave them the lead.
A home run to Kerry Carpenter. That ball's hit well, deep center field. Way back there, Giancarlo Stanton, a home run! Judge and Stanton go back to back, and the New York Yankees have grabbed the lead.
Yeah, that was stunning.
It was.
Certainly stunning. Like just what happened in New York right now, Tony.
Yeah. Pete Alonso, the
polar
pig
bear, the first baseman pig pen,
went dead central, and it looked like he hit a pop up. And then all of a sudden,
off the bat.
Pages is not even running after the ball. It was a bomb. 3-0. Mets take a lead here in the first. And looking at the Mets fans, they're thinking about how in the world are we going to lose this game right now?
They're a little worried still, you think?
They're already worried.
Oh, don't go there, Mets fans.
I'm just saying, that every Mets fan I know thinks like that. All right, here is the homer in the ninth. Two outs, 1-0 pitch. Here's Brian Anderson.
Oh! Oh!
Big Christmas has tied it. The ultimate present under the tree.
You know, and Darling and Jeff Francoeur did a great job on the first two calls of not jumping in, but they couldn't help it.
I think that was Francoeur.
This is two outs.
Two outs. You're down. You're going to go down 3-0 in the series. Luke Weaver's hardly given up a hit.
By the way, that was not a bad pitch that Pete Alonso
Flaherty,
hit.
Put it down, hit it off his ankles.
Yeah.
Great job by Alonso.
Here's that one more time, the beginning, because I think it's hilarious.
Oh!
He said before VA did.
Yeah.
That had to be Francoeur, for sure.
He couldn't help it, though.
I
was kind of slumbering on my couch at that moment, and, you know, you're just laying there, and you're like, Yankees win. And then, so everybody, I think, went,
Yeah, no doubt.
You had to, you know, get attentive when that hit, when he hit that ball.
Do you have the last one?
I do.
Now let's play the walk-off piece.
Winning run in game three. Fry, deep drive, left field. Fry's watching. It is. Lights up the Cleveland night.
That's pretty good stuff, man. When your hairs are standing up.
I could tell you.
Good job, BA.
I would say that was in a 2.5-inning span.
Yeah, right. It was 3-1. It was a very boring game until all of that happened.
For him to still have a good call at the end of it, the fourth homer he saw.
He was ready.
That's why he's BA.
Good job, BA. We got to get him on. I know I was talking about it back
last night
with you guys. And he'll be done probably when the series is over, and he'll go to NBA, where he's also amazing.
Yep.
But the reason you know him, Tony, is because he's the voice of the Brewers.
Yes, sir.
So you knew him way back when, before he was this... big of a deal, but he deserves every bit that he gets because he's amazingly good.
I think I had him his first year with the Brewers.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, super nice guy. I know when I got into this business, he offered his representation and things of that nature. So he's a stand-up dude.
Yeah, you know, he made some great calls and a great game. I mean, this is, I tell you, this has been a pretty good sports postseason, wouldn't you say?
This has been a great.
I mean, we've had grand slams, walk-offs, big bombs, late changes in games.
A team that didn't score for 24 runs?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to forget that one.
Scraby, why do you keep bringing us back there, man?
Yeah, we're trying to get past it if we ever can.
We were just talking about the goodness of playoff baseball, not the terribleness of baseball.
I really want to know, from a pitcher. Like, who gave up the walk-off home run?
Clay Holmes.
I want to know, not the walk-off, I guess, the game-tying home run.
Luke Weaver.
How do you go back and focus on getting the next out? Because your team down.
Literally going into that day, we had just talked about Luke Weaver being almost unhittable.
Yeah.
Unhittable.
So you just have to revert back just 24 hours before that to where you felt unhittable. And go from there.
I feel like I would fall off the mound the next day, but just so much pressure.
Well, here's the thing. What would you think would be tougher, giving up a game-tying home run like that or getting beat cleanly on a touchdown if you're a cornerback? The reason I think the cornerback is tougher is because it might just happen again despite all of your preparation. In baseball...
I think you can tip your cap
to the hitter sometimes and say, hey, I made my pitch,
Class A,
or I didn't make my pitch.
Right.
I got to just pitch better.
Class A to Aaron Judge.
For sure.
But he can be pissed at himself for making a bad pitch to Stanton.
So I think that's how you deal with it. I wouldn't know, Scrabe. Never gave up a home run.
Oh, yeah?
No.
What do you mean? You were just warning track power off
Well, it was hard to hit a home run off me because I threw the ball so slowly.
You weren't generating.
Everybody had to generate all their own power, but
Classe's stare after the inning.
He could just see his heart was broken.
It was just like a million mile stare.
It's like, did that just happen?
I would love to just get the things that were going on in
bubbles.
His head.
Yeah,
yes.
For sure. All right, let's get to break. I'm going to switch gears, talk some college basketball. Mark Ziegler will join us next. We'll get into some of this Mountain West Pac-12. Obviously, the Mountain West just had their preseason conference media day. We'll get into it all on the other side. More Gwen and Chris.
Welcome back to Gwen and Chris. 2:36 is the time. The Odyssey app lets you jump back to the moments you missed on 97.3 The Fan. While you're listening, you can see what you missed and click to listen on demand. If you missed a guest, a feature, or something crazy that happened from earlier, we've got you covered. Download the free Odyssey app, search 97.3 The Fan, and tap earlier today. That'll get you started. We are got you started here with Gwynn and Chris. Crisello, Tony Gwynn Jr., and Matt Scraby. Pete Alonso, the polar bear plunge, three-run homer in the bottom of the first, and it is still 3-0 Mets. Dodgers batting in the top of the second inning. Back to all of the baseball talk in just a moment, but if we have a list of our all-time favorite guests on this show, we put together that list. This guy would be on it. He'd be at the bottom of the list because it would be alphabetical. See what I did there? From the Union Tribune, our guy Mark Ziegler joins us. Hi, Mark. Always good to talk to you. You always had like an extra couple minutes to get to class, right? By the time they read off your name.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I don't mind being in the bottom of the list.
That's right. You were last to
No recognized. Offense here.
Very good, Mark. You know you're way up at the top. All right, Aztec basketball, we always get excited. And, you know, I don't even care that they picked them fourth. You know, when you lose pretty much everybody from the team, I guess that makes sense. But do you think this is fourth place, or do you think this is – I was surprised because I read your article today, and I didn't remember they actually finished fifth last year before making the run in the tournament. So I guess it's a deep league again.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think every league across the nation right now is wide open, and that's just because everyone has new pieces. And even teams that, you know, put together great transfer classes, they still have to play together. And we saw a lot of examples last year. I mean, a team like Washington had $2.5 million transfer kitty, and they had the leading assist leader from both the Big Ten and the Big East on their roster. They had a pro, two guys from Kentucky, but one of them, you know, for sure pro. You know, they had guys from the Mountain West. They had all kinds of guys on their bench making it, you know, sizable NIL, and they couldn't do anything, and the coach got fired. And so, we saw it everywhere, and so it's really hard to say, well, this team's going to be better than this team, because in the past, you just knew who was coming back, and there weren't that many players coming in. And now you have rosters, maybe not to Sandy State's extreme, but that have four and five key pieces that are coming in, and no one knows how they're going to mold and meld. And so, we're just going to have to wait and see what happens.
Feels like that's kind of the new age of really college sports, wait and see. You got so many transfers rolling in every year, and the turnover is so much higher than it used to be. It kind of makes some sense, Mark. You got a chance to see this Aztec squad inter-squad a couple times. What have you seen? What have you been impressed with watching these guys get after each other?
Well, a bunch of practices and like you said, both inter-squad scrimmages. And there are days I'm out there going, wow, this is going to be a rough season. And then there's days I'm looking at it going, wow, you know, they've got some real pieces here. They you know, they get together, they get healthy, and they start playing. They're really big. They're long. They got a lot of offensive options, and it's exciting. Athletes and start thinking, you know, this the league maybe isn't as good as it was last year. They could do some stuff. And so I just keep going back and forth. I don't know what to think. I think the coaches are in the same boat. I mean, I get the sense that there's some days they think, oh, we'll be okay. And there's some days they're just panicked. And so I think the big thing with this team is it's young. You know, they're going to have, I think, five freshmen and sophomores in the rotation, and only one of those, and that's Miles Heide. Got regular minutes last year. The rest of them are new, new to college basketball or new to major minutes, like a guy like BJ Davis, who was on the team but didn't really play very much. And so that's something that's new, that, you know, the way they've had success in the past few years is being older than everybody else, having these fifth and sixth year seniors, guys like Jane Liddy and Adam Seiko and, you know, AG. I mean, you look at the roster, you look at the rotation from the national championship game, and there was nine guys in a rotation, and they were junior, senior, seniors, or fifth year seniors and sixth year senior. And that's, you know, just not the reality anymore. And so I think that's the biggest hurdle to overcome.
Mark Ziegler's with us. You know, all that said, Mark, I think that Brian Dutcher you know, with what he's accomplished, you know, gives all of us, you know, a very confident feeling coming into any season that he is going to figure it out. He's going to get the best out of this group, and they're going to, you know, improve like, you know, Brian Dutcher and Steve Fisher teams before that always improved throughout the season. What do you think his secret sauce is to being able to do that consistently?
That's pretty simple, and it's that they don't panic. You know, Steve Fisher, they used to talk about, he was at his best, and Dutch used to talk to me about that when he was an assistant. He would, you know, they'd lose a game or two, and he'd say, watch how he acts. He's so good in these situations. He doesn't panic. He doesn't let one loss become two losses become three, because you don't dwell on it. You move on. It's always next play. And there's just sort of a patience and an even keel. And that allows teams to progress on the floor and get better. They're never looking in the rearview mirror. They're not afraid to make mistakes. And, you know, they just sort of quietly learn from them. You know, in the game, they don't harp on mistakes. They might look at them in film the next day. But they move on. And I think players appreciate that. You know, players don't want to be on a knife edge, wondering if their coach is going to scream at them all the time. And so I think that kind of allows them to just get better day by day, minute by minute, practice by practice. And so that's good to have, and he'll have that patience with this group. But it's going to be interesting to see what the fans do. And, you know, they just raised ticket prices 20%. And they've been to a Sweet 16 and a national championship game the last 2 years. What happens if they open the season and they're 2-4, which they very well could be. If they don't beat a ranked team, they're probably going to be 2-4. In February, they probably could handle those games. I'm not sure they can handle them now. And so how will the rest of us deal with that? That'll be the interesting thing for me to see. I know how Dutch will deal with it.
That is certainly something to be thinking about. You know, the folks are a little less patient than they used to be, especially with all the success we've seen. Mark Ziegler joins us here, San Diego Union Tribune. All right, Mark, I have a bunch of questions. I hope you can kind of iron this out for us in terms of the lawsuit with the NCAA, how it affects San Diego State and these scholarships, and how, if it even affects San Diego State and all. And then the National Letter of Intent rule that just changed. Could you kind of explain that in layman's terms for us?
Well, the National Letter of Intent is, I think they're just transitioning to the day, which is coming, whether it's next year or the year after. It should be one of those two, when they're actually the power conferences, not the Mountain West of the world, but the power conferences, which are only four of them now, are paying athletes. And when they're actually from the university cutting a check to an athlete, they have to have a different kind of letter of intent. The letter of intent now just says scholarship, has nothing about payment. So I think they got rid of it now because they're kind of in that transition period. And they'll replace it with something else, some more legalese. They basically send it back to the lawyers and say, write something else up that will be more binding and more of a contract. So that's what that's about. The House settlement, you know, it doesn't directly affect a school like San Diego State, because they're not going to have these roster limits. They're not going to have these unlimited scholarships, at least to start with. But it does affect them indirectly, because these power conference schools are going to be able to, A, pay athletes in addition probably to what they're getting in NIL, and B, they'll be able to have, in many sports, more scholarships if they want. And we'll see how they decide to approach that. I think in some sports, a big school may say, we're not really a national contender in softball, for example, so we're not going to have very many scholarships in that opportunities, and we'll just field the team and we'll be competitive and that'll be the end of it. But let's say you're really good at men's soccer. Well, all of a sudden, you can go from, you know, 9.9 scholarships up to 24 or 20 or whatever the limit's going to be. You could get really good. And those poor schools that are mid-majors are just going to get run over. And so there's going to be a little bit of that going on. So indirectly, I think it does affect a school like San Diego State, because it'll be harder to compete with those top power conference schools, because they're going to have so many advantages financially or with the number of scholarships.
Mark, Aztecs go to the Pac-12 July 1st, 2026. So we're still a year and a half away. Give me all of the positives maybe not the obvious positives, but some other positives maybe we haven't thought of, and concerns with this conference. I know Gonzaga's in for basketball. I mean, are they going to get to eight teams? Is that going to all work out? Is it all going to – are they going to land safely in the Pac-12 once it's time to go there?
Well, I mean, the big positive is that you just have a stronger overall league because you cut out the bottom of the Mountain West, essentially, and you added two schools that are fairly well-resourced in Oregon State and Washington State. Now, we'll see how they are going forward. I mean, you've already seen their football programs take a big step back this year just because athletes realized they're not playing in the Power Conference League. They don't feel they're going to get the same exposure. Maybe they don't have the same NIL resources as some of those other schools do, but they still have great facilities. They have big budgets. You know, they have big coaching staffs, et cetera. So, you know, they're joining two schools that have those kind of resources. So it's a step up. I mean, it's just an upgrade overall. The concern obviously is they've got to get another school, which I think they will. I mean, they've got plenty of time. I think they'll make another run at some AAC schools, in particular Memphis, and they'll build it from there. It's a better basketball league. It's a really, really good basketball league. You just add Gonzaga, and it's a great basketball league. But the fact that, you know, Boise State's been good, Washington State and Oregon State have had ups and downs, but they have been very good in basketball at times. Utah State's been very good at basketball. Colorado State's been solid. And so it's a great basketball league. And so for San Diego State, which really is a basketball school, if we want to admit that, if we're being honest, it's a great fit. And so that part is good. I think the biggest concern is, you know, the financial piece is unknown. And you got to remember, San Diego State's got to pay this exit fee, which would probably be about $18 million. And that, if I understand it correctly, is going to come out of it's going to be a loan from the Pac-12, from their big war chest coming back to San Diego State, and then they'll just take it out of future revenues. So those first few years they're in the Pac-12, they won't, I don't think they'll get the full share, the full amount, the greater dollar from TV or media rights and all the other stuff that they normally would, because they're still going to be paying off that exit fee. So that's going to limit some of the things they're able to do and some of the resources they're going to have for a few years. And so that's a concern because, look, you're San Diego State, you're competing in football against Oregon State and Washington State, which have great practice facilities and recruiting centers and academic centers and all those things for football. And, you know, we've all seen San Diego State's football practice facility. And so it's hard to invest when you're kind of behind the eight ball paying off those exit fees.
No doubt about it. Mark Ziegler joins us here, San Diego Union Tribune. And Mark, we had assistant coach Ryan Babertelli on a couple days ago, and he mentioned some of the new roles that guys are being asked. And one of the names he brought up was Reese Waters, who he said was going to be asked to do a little bit something different than he was last year. Do you have any idea what is going to be asked of him? Because looking at the roster, he'd be the one that could be the go-to guy for the Aztecs offensively this year.
Yeah, I got that sense too. In fact, he was at Media Day yesterday in Las Vegas, and I asked a question. I said, you know, last year you were obviously a very much of a Jaden Ledee-centric team. And even before that, they were kind of a Matt Bradley team, where they got the ball to him, late shot clock, got out of the way, guy could create his own shot, and that's kind of how Jaden was. And this year it's much more democratic. It's much more equal opportunity. They're playing multiple sides of the floor. I said, okay, I get that, but what happens late shot clock, late in the game, someone's got to take a shot. And Reese just stepped up and said, you know, I'd like to have the ball in my hands. And so I think that's the big difference is, you know, you all run your plays, everyone runs their plays, but everyone scouts them and knows that they're coming. If you defend them right, they don't work.
Right.
And then it's what do you do on the back half of the play, and what do you do when the shot clock's under 8 seconds? Who gets the ball? And who can create a shot? And Reese can do that. He has such a quick release. He's a big body, long arms, athletic, high release on his jumper, great mid-range player. And I think he'll be getting the ball in those situations a lot of times. And I think that's going to be something that's, you know, last year he never had it in those situations because it was going to Jaden. So I think that's something they're looking to from him, and we'll see how that goes. He's a little banged up right now, so he's got to get healthy first. But he certainly has the skill. We saw that in the Gonzaga game last year when they won at Gonzaga. He was the best player on the floor.
We got 2 minutes left, Mark, and I have to ask about Magoon Gwaith, because I think he seems to be the most intriguing player on the roster. There are those out there that I've seen tweet that are big basketball, you know, people, and they say this guy's going to be a household name in the Mountain West. He already seems like a fan favorite just because he's 7 feet and shoots threes. Coach didn't want to say too much about him the other day because he wants to make sure we talk about all the players. But is this guy, you know, anything close to what we hope maybe he could be?
He's certainly shown flashes of it. But, you know, people need to remember this is a redshirt freshman who didn't play last year and didn't even practice half the year because he was coming off ankle surgery, pretty major ankle surgery. You know, and the year before that, he was a little bit banged up in high school. And before that, he played at a smaller school in the Dallas area. And so he really hasn't played a lot of high-level basketball before. And what that means is, as talented as he is, as much upside as he is, he's going to be up and down this season. And he has been in practices and in the scrimmages. He's had these flashes where he just took over games. He got a rebound, and he led the break. And somebody, you know, he passed ahead to somebody who missed a shot, and he flew in and got the tip dunk. And then he got a steal at midcourt and came back and hit a three. And, you know, but then he disappeared for 5 or 10 minutes. And so I think people have to understand that he's going to be really good, but he's not going to be consistent. That's what young players usually are. And so they're going to have some patience with him. I think this is going to be an up-and-down year. If they're lucky enough to keep him next year, I think he'll be a monster in college basketball next year. But this year we'll see some flashes. And again, it goes back to the expectation question we were talking about earlier. If people have too high expectations for him, they're going to be disappointed. If they just come into it and say, look, this guy hasn't played very much, he's very raw, but everything he does is a positive, they'll be much more satisfied, I think, in the end.
Mark, thanks so much. Just don't forget that we are 7 in UConn in the NCAA tournament the last 2 years.
I love that line.
Yeah.
my other favorite was Dutch when I asked him yesterday about being picked 4th. He goes, well, we finished 5th last year, and so 4th, 1 spot higher.
That's
just
right.
Look at the positive.
He's the glass half full for sure. Mark, always fun catching up to you. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks,
Mark. Again, buddy.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for letting T ask some questions today, too. Appreciate that.
Why? Do I do that? We go back and forth, don't we?
We do.
All right.
Yeah, there was one day that he couldn't get any questions,
okay.
And I felt bad for him.
Yeah, I did too. I was like, man,
I just
Chris,
get my man's back.
Man, I appreciate
Chris, stop
you, Mark.
Talking,
thank
bro.
You, brother.
You know how you know how egotistical I am, guys. So it's certainly understandable that yes, that happened. All right, Mark Ziegler, very good there. Priscello, it's on my show. And these other two guys, we'll let them in on it a little bit when we come back. 3-1 now, Mets over the Dodgers. More to come.